Amen. Please be seated.
Good morning. How are y'all doing? Good. It's good to see everybody. It is certainly good to be here this morning. We're beginning a new year, so we're going to be talking about a new theme. We'll be introducing that in just a minute, but we're kind of unpacking this new year. We've had a lot of great things happen already at the end of last year and leading into this year. And I was thinking about, as Joe was giving our communion comments, with our kids, we of course would not allow them to partake of the Lord's Supper. They got to watch us do it, and they would always ask us about it, you know, and wonder why they couldn't drink the juice and eat the cracker, because they were always hungry, and you know, they wanted to know. But I think as time progressed, and as you know, Sarah finally came to the point where she obeyed the gospel and she was able to do that for the first time, it she realized why we waited, why we didn't allow them to do that, because of the significance of the symbol. And it's meaningful. It's meaningful. And I was thinking about Caden Smith this morning, and I was thinking about he putting on Jesus in baptism, and how that first Sunday when you come to worship, and we do forget sometimes that we have gotten to that point where we can commune with the Lord. And it's a special time for us. And I was thinking about that. I thought I would share that with you. Also, I was thinking about 2020, just kind of unpacking this year in my mind, and it's been difficult, hasn't it? I mean, it really has. It's been very difficult. Things that we never imagined would ever happen have happened. You know, I never imagined that we would shut down schools early. I mean, I kind of hoped when I was a kid, but you know, as an adult, I never really imagined that would happen, but it did. I never imagined that we'd have to close the doors to the congregation and not be able to meet in the buildings. That was not something that was really on my radar, especially at the beginning of the year. I just really never thought that we'd have to go around wearing masks everywhere. That was such a strange thing. The riots that we've seen throughout the country, the political and civil unrest, I mean, that, all of it has just been really, really difficult and bizarre. And what I would really like to do, I think, is that mentally, I want to just put it all behind me. I really do. I mean, I just want to say, you know what, this new year means that it's all over, that it's done, that it's never going to happen again, that all that happened is going to come to an abrupt end, and it's just over, and we can start over again. But I think that's an unrealistic expectation. What do you think? You know, I would like to say that, and I would like to think that, and I would like to feel that. I would like to be there. I don't want to hear about it anymore. I don't want to talk about it anymore, but it's not really realistic. And I'm afraid that if we go through life waiting for those times where things are just good, those times when the chaos and the disorder and the difficulties end, and if we're just waiting for those times to commit ourselves to whatever is important in our life, if we're just waiting for those times to think about those things and just thinking, you know, when it's all over and all the difficulties are over and everything is smooth sailing, that's the time I'm going to step in and actually act and respond and do the things I'm supposed to be doing. And I'm afraid that if we think that way, that we're never going to do it. What do you think? Because I think that's kind of how we feel sometimes. We feel like when the pressure's off, that's when I'll do it. But the pressure's never really off, is it? Whether it's a global pandemic like what we've experienced, which is weird, and you know, hopefully we never have to go through that again, but we may, and we're still going through it. Or it's a local chaos, something that's happening to you personally, right? That happens too. And sometimes we go through these periods of chaos alone, or at least it feels that way. But you know, that's life, isn't it? And I would like that not to be the reality, but it is the reality. And so I think we need to enter into this new year asking some different questions. I think we need to ask different questions, not when is it all going to be over, but how do I move forward in spite of the chaos, in spite of the difficulties, in spite of it all? How do I move forward knowing that that's just part of reality? not saying to myself, let's just put it all behind us and put it all behind me and forget about it, but to say, I know it's coming. How am I going to move forward in the midst of it all? In the midst of the storm, in the midst of the chaos, how am I going to move forward? Because the reality is, there will always be chaos. Isn't that true? There will always be some kind of chaos, whether it's personal, whether it's global, it doesn't matter. It's always going to exist. And we need to learn to live in this reality and function and be the people God wants us to be right in the middle of it all, right in the middle of the storm, to be faithful to God. So this theme this year, as I've been thinking about the year and what we're going to do and some of the lessons I would like to teach for this year, the theme is refocus. And I hope that we can simply refocus our thoughts and our minds on things that are more important. Things like family, things like relationships, things like worship. These things that are important for us. And I hope through this year that we can be better equipped to deal with the storms that will come in the future as we move into this new year. So I have this New Year's resolution. I hope that you join me in keeping it this year. Let's, as a church family, let's resolve to spend more time focusing on Jesus and less time focusing on the chaos around us. Let's do that. Let's focus on those things, and let's allow Jesus to be our peace. Let's allow Jesus to be the solid ground that we walk on. Let's allow Jesus to perfect our faith as we move forward in spite of the chaos around us. So we're going to spend some time in Matthew chapter 14 this morning. And we're not going to read the whole chapter, but I feel like we need to get a grip of what's going on here in Matthew's gospel. And so Matthew chapter 14 is the part where we are told about John the Baptist's untimely death, that he's going to die. And so it's kind of a bit of a flashback as to what Herod of Tetrarch has done to John the Baptist. After John the Baptist has called him out in regards to relationship that Herod had. And so he is going to be beheaded. And so it starts off by basically saying, you know, that Herod hears about Jesus, and the first thing that comes to his mind is John the Baptist, right? Because that is the chaos in his life. That is the unsettling thing in his life, is to know that he put that man to death, and that man was a righteous man, and that he was a faithful man, but he put him to death anyway because of his own lusts and his own desires. And so that was on his mind. And then when we go down to verse 13 of this same chapter, Jesus hears about John. And we get to hear about Jesus' response to John's untimely demise. So it says in verse 13, "Now when Jesus heard about John, he withdrew from there in a boat to a secluded place by himself." And I think as we follow Jesus' ministry and we follow Jesus' life, we see that it's common for Jesus to seek some secluded place, right? Some form of isolation. Jesus, when he is facing difficult times, when he is facing times when he really needs to bring himself to focus and bring himself to do the thing that he struggles to do or to cope with something like this, that he finds a secluded place and he prays to his God and he spends some time in meditation to his God. And I was thinking about seclusion and how Jesus is looking for a secluded place, but we're kind of not, are we? I mean, we're so sick of seclusion. We're so sick of isolation. But really, that's a time when we really come together with God, right? And we need to think about these times of isolation and seclusion. Like Jesus thought about them. So we find Jesus seeking out seclusion. And then when the people heard of this, he followed him on foot from the cities. Remember, Jesus has a following of people that are going around. And when he went ashore, he saw a large crowd and felt compassion for them and healed their sick. You know, when we're struggling, okay, when we're struggling, all right, maybe this is true about you. I know it's true about me, but when I'm struggling, I find a lot of trouble finding compassion for others. Do you ever feel that way? when you're stressed out and you're struggling and you're having a difficult time coping with something and something's going on in your life, do you find it difficult to show compassion to others? I know I do. I think that's, maybe that's a normal way of thinking. Maybe it's just me, but I find it difficult. And I find it interesting and unique about Jesus' character that when Jesus sees this crowd, even though he's dealing with this situation, he still finds compassion for the people that are coming to him who are sick and who are hurting, and he heals them. In verse 15, it says, and when it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, this place is desolate. It's kind of like, you know, Jesus is looking for seclusion. They find him, right? And they're coming, this is a desolate place, Lord. And he's thinking, I know, right? That's why I came here. You know, it's a desolate place. But they're recognizing the very fact that this crowd is in need of something. They're in this place. It's getting dark, right? I mean, this is not a safe place to be. They need food. They need shelter. They're staying there with Jesus. It's a desolated place, and the hour is already late. Send the crowd away, that they may go into the village and buy food for themselves. Now, part of going into the village is not just buying food, but it's finding a safe place, right? I mean, you know, we don't really live in a world where we're concerned about it getting dark, right? I mean, not so much. Not here in Monahans, Texas, not so much. But there are other places of the world that if you're in a desolate place and it starts getting dark, your life is in danger. That there are people there who want to take your life, that there are things that are there that want to take your life. And so you're worried for your life. So you want the security of the city. And so that's what's going on. And so Jesus is being told by his disciples, you know, send these people away so they can go find food, find shelter, and they will not be here in the dark. But Jesus said to them, they do not need to go away. They don't need to go away. Now, of course, they needed to go away, right? I mean, in all reality, they needed to go away. In the mind of the disciple, in all reality, if this were any other circumstance and Jesus wasn't there, they needed to go away. They needed to find a safe place. They needed to find food. But Jesus is saying, because he's there, they don't have to go anywhere. They can stay right here. They can stay in isolation. They can stay in this place. They can be here. And then he says, you give them something to eat. Right? So not only does he have compassion for the crowd during this time of chaos in his life, because I mean, it is chaotic. I mean, Jesus, John, the loss of this friend and relative. I mean, there is a time here where Jesus is pressured and he's not free from human experience. And so Jesus is here. He's showing compassion for the crowd to heal the sick, but he also finds an opportunity to teach his disciples. Right? To teach them and help them to understand. And then it says in verse 17, we're kind of moving through this quick because we're not quite at the verse I want us to be at, but verse 17, and they said to him, we have here only 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, bring them here to me. And he ordered the people to sit down on the grass. He took the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and he looked towards the heaven and blessed the food, and he, breaking the loaves, he gave them to the disciples, and the disciples gave them to the crowds. Verse 20, and they all ate and were satisfied, and they picked up what was left over, the broken pieces, the 12 baskets full. And there were about 5,000 men who ate, besides the women and the children. So I want us to kind of pause here for just a minute and just think about this idea. All right, just... we're not going to park here very long, but think about this. If Jesus gives his disciples a command, right? No matter how impossible it seems, no matter how difficult it was, I mean, who would have ever thought that they were going to be able to feed the 5,000 plus people with these 5 loaves and 2 fish? I mean, that's not logical. But if Jesus gives you a command, even if it's seemingly impossible, Jesus is also going to give his disciples the means in which to fulfill that command. You see that? That Jesus is going to make sure that they're going to be able to actually fulfill the command. That even though it was impossible to feed all these people with such little food, if Jesus commands his disciples to do it, he's also going to give them the means in which to do it also. Verse 22. Now here, we're starting to get into the main part that I want us to spend time on this morning. In verse 22, it says, immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go ahead of him to the other side. Now, while he sent the crowds away, and then it says, after he had sent the crowds away, he went up on the mountain by himself to pray. And when it was evening, he was there alone. So this is, if you're following along in Matthew, this is our second boat story, if you will, in Matthew. The first one was in Matthew chapter 8, where we see Jesus and the disciples in a boat, and Jesus is sleeping. And in that story, the storm is raging all around them, and the disciples are fearful because of the storm, and they have to wake up Jesus to calm the storm. And then in verse 24, it says, but the boat was already a long distance from the land, and it was battered by the waves, for the wind was contrary. So, setting the scene, disciples have already gone ahead of Jesus. They're in the boat. There's this big storm. The boat is being tossed around. It's being battered by the storm. They're afraid. They don't know exactly what to do. Jesus has stayed behind to find his isolation, his seclusion, and be alone, which he has found. And he's just, you know, kind of like saying, you know, you guys go ahead, I'll catch up. And so that's basically what's going on. But the very idea, I was thinking about being in a boat. You know, I'm not a big fan of boats. I particularly don't like planes either. I don't like things where I'm in and I feel like, you know, I mean, just you're kind of in this thing and there's not a whole lot that you can do. You lose a lot of control. That's how I feel about it. And you can imagine yourself being in a boat in the midst of water, and the water is coming down on you, and the storm is raging, and the boat is being torn to pieces, and the only thing that's keeping you from sudden death in the murky waters is this boat that's already coming apart, you know. And I, of course, I feel that way about planes too, you know. It's like you're just in there, and it's there's something about that that makes you feel like you've lost control. You've lost control of the situation, and I think that's how we're supposed to feel in the story. That the disciples have lost control of the situation. They are hopeless on their own to save themselves, and they're hopeless in the midst of this storm. They can do nothing. All they can do is just try to keep that boat together and hope that it stays together and doesn't fall apart on them in the midst of this storm. So that I think that's where we're supposed to be mentally, is seeing the chaos and the disorder and the uncertainty of the situation. As the boat is being battered by the waves. Now, look at verse 25. And it says, in the fourth watch, this would be like 3, 6 a.m., somewhere around there, of the night, he came to them, walking on the sea. Now, I love how the scriptures just kind of casually throw that out there. You know, it's like, he just, you know, here comes Jesus. He's walking on the water. And we see that often where Jesus does something and it's just kind of a passing and we want to pause and say, whoa, wait a second. That's not right. It's not how things work. That's not how nature works. You cannot just walk out on the sea. But as Matthew unfolds this story, he says, here comes Jesus. He's walking on the sea. Remember, but in the other boat story, Jesus was in the boat during the storm. Now he's walking through the storm to get to his disciples as they are being battered by the storm. Verse 26, and when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified. And they said it was a ghost. It was a phantom. And they cried out with fear. So just when you thought it was going to get worse, right? You know, you're in this boat. It's being battered. You're hoping the boat holds together. You're hoping the storm's going to go away. The chaos is going to end. And maybe the boat will be solid enough and you can at least get to the shore. That's kind of your hope. Right now, you're just weathering the storm, right? You're just hoping the boat's going to stay together. And the waves are coming and the storm is raging. And there you are in the middle of this boat and you're helpless and you're afraid. And what's worse? The storm or this phantom or this person who is walking on the water, you know? I mean, how could things get any worse? And then here comes this shadowy figure coming out of the storm, walking towards you. And man, this has got to be a terrifying scene for the disciples. And then it says in verse 27, but immediately Jesus spoke to them saying, take courage, it is I, do not be afraid. It is I, it is the the I am. The I am of the Old Testament, the I am of Matthew. Take courage, right? Breathe a sigh of relief in the midst of all of this, right? I mean, all of this, breathe a sigh of relief. Just say, it's Jesus. It's the I am. He's coming through the storm. He's coming towards the boat, and we're in the middle of this, and we're fearing for our lives, and now we fear for this shadowy figure that's coming towards us, but wait, it's Jesus. Take courage. Breathe a sigh of relief. How often, and this kind of brings us back to where we started, how often do we wait and want to wait until the storm passes before we breathe a sigh of relief? How often do we want to wait until it's all over before we decide to take courage and do what we need to do and think the way we need to think? And how often do we do that? How often do we say, just make it all stop? Just make it all stop. Just bring it all to an end so that I can have relief, so that I can be relieved. And I think all throughout Scripture, we hear people saying this, right? You know, just, Lord, bring your salvation, bring your peace. Bring us through this. But I also think that all throughout Scripture, as you're reading through the Old Testament, and I hope that you see that this year as you read through the Old Testament, that God expects his people to take courage, to breathe a sigh of relief before the battle even begins. Right? Before the storm even starts. Or even in the midst of the storm, in the midst of the chaos, God calls his people to take courage and to breathe a sigh of relief, to say that I'm with you. I will see you through this. That if you trust in me and you obey me and you follow me and you do what I tell you to do and you be the people that I want you to be, that you don't have anything to fear. To take courage even before the battle begins, because I will give you the victory. Take courage in the middle of the storm. But all so often, I'm afraid that we want it now. We want peace now. We want the storm to end now. And then we'll take courage. And then we'll breathe a sigh of relief. And then we'll do what we're supposed to do. But that's not what Jesus is saying, is it? And that's not what the disciples are experiencing in this story. In verse 28, this is one of our favorite parts, I think, of this story. But in verse 28, Peter said to him, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. Now, Peter is not expressing doubt about Jesus being Jesus. I mean, he's not saying, you know, if it's you, command me and I'll do it. And if it works, it works. If not, then it's not you, I guess. He's not saying that. He's saying, you know, since it's you know, call me out of this boat. Bring me to yourself. Allow me to step onto the water and come to you. And then it says that Jesus responds in verse 29, come. Just, all right, Peter, if that's what you want to do, if you want to come to me, that's fine. You come. You come. And Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came towards Jesus. Now, when the disciples were handing out enough food to feed the multitude, the 5,000 plus, remember? As the disciples are handing out this food and the food just keeps multiplying and multiplying, it wasn't the disciples multiplying the food, was it? Now, they were handing it out. They're collecting the food. They've got their responsibility in this work as well. But it's Jesus multiplying it, right? Jesus is multiplying the food. When Jesus commands Peter to step out of the boat, when he steps out of the boat in the midst of the storm, it's not Peter's power. It's not Peter's authority that allowed him to step on that water and move away from the boat. Whose is it? It's Jesus, right? Jesus. And so he commands him to come out of the boat. He comes out of the boat. And I think that the lesson that we need to draw from that is that when the Father commands us to do his will, and when we go out and we do his will and we do the things that he desires for us to do, and we are the people and we be the people that he wants us to be, it's not our power and it's not our authority that brings about that fulfillment. It's God's. See, God is the one who has the authority. He's the one that has the power. We do. and we be the people that he desires for us to be. Look at the next verse. The next verse, it says, "But seeing the wind, he became frightened. And beginning to sink, he cried out, 'Lord, save me.'" The chaos all around them, it didn't stop when Peter stepped out of the boat, right? The chaos didn't stop. Remember the last boat story? They wake Jesus up and he calms the storm. It's still storming. The boat is still being battered by the waves. All of this seems to be still taking place in the story. The chaos is still there. The tension has not been relieved yet. We're still feeling it. And Peter gets out of the boat and the storm is raging all around him. He steps away from the security of his boat. You know, and I think that's kind of a weird way to put it, but as I was thinking about what Peter's doing, there was a sense of security in being in the boat, wasn't there? Just a little bit. I mean, you know, we know the boat's not going to make it. It doesn't seem like it is. It's coming apart, but there's a sense of security in being in the boat. There's a sense of safety being in the, even though it's being battered, even though it's being torn apart, there is that slim sense of false security being in the boat. And Peter steps out, but when he sees the storm raging around him, he becomes fearful. And he stops focusing and he begins to sink and he has to cry out, "Lord, save me." In verse 31, it says, "Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and took hold of him and said to him, 'You of little faith, why did you doubt?'" See, Peter's problem was doubt, wasn't it? I mean, the chaos around him distracted him. He doubted. He began to sink. He lost his single-minded focus on Jesus. And he began to sink in the chaotic waters. The chaos was around him. Even when he stepped out of the boat, he was able to do that. I mean, that wasn't an issue. He was able to fulfill that command of Jesus to come. And he steps out of the boat. The storm is still raging. But when the storm takes his focus away from Jesus, what happens? He begins to sink. He begins to become distressed. You know, I think we all want to believe that if Jesus calls us out of our sinking boat, that if Jesus calls us out of our sinking boat, our false sense of security, to come to him, that we would. Don't you think? I think we all want to believe that. We all want to believe that if Jesus calls us out of the sinking ship, our false sense of security, that we're just going to go. We're going to do whatever Jesus tells us to do. And I would say that Peter probably believed that too. I think if you were to ask him that question before he even got in the boat, he would say, "Absolutely, absolutely. I'd walk right through that storm to Jesus. I didn't have any problem at all with it. I would do it. If Jesus called me to walk on fire, I'd walk on fire. Jesus called me to walk on water to him, I'd walk on water. I don't care what's going on around me." And I think Peter would say that. I kind of feel like Peter would say something like that, because I would say something like that when I'm on the shore. When the boat was doing okay. But in the midst of all of this, we see Peter losing his focus. We want to believe that after we take that first step, that we will remain focused, that we will keep our eyes fixed on Jesus. But the reality is that there will always be chaos, right? There's always going to be chaos. Whether it's on a global scale like we're experiencing now, or whether it's in an individual personal level, there's always going to be chaos. We all face times of disorder. We all face times of confusion. And at some point, we have to make a choice, don't we? At some point, we have to make a choice. Will I focus on the chaos, the disorder, the confusion, those things that are beyond my control? Will I focus on those things? Will I focus on a false sense of security that's keeping me here, a false sense of security that's keeping me in a boat that's being destroyed, a false sense of security that's keeping me where I'm at? Or will I focus on something else? Will I focus on someone else? Will I have a single-minded focus on Jesus in spite of the chaos around me, in spite of the storm, in spite of the confusion, in spite of the difficulties? Will I have a single-minded focus on Jesus? We want to wait until the storm ends, don't you? I want this storm to end. I want it to go away. I want all of the difficulties in life to go away. I want the chaos to end. I want things to be seemingly normal. But folks, what if our normal was our sinking ship? What if our seemingly normal reality that we've lived on and on so comfortably with, and we thought this is good, and we're, you know, any day now I can get up and I can do whatever I want to do, and I can say what I want to say, and I can be the person that I want to be, and every day we have that freedom and opportunity. What if that was our sinking ship? What if that was it? And the chaos is just making us realize that the ship is sinking. The life we try to live on our own, the life that we try to live without Jesus, the life that we try to live without the church, the life that we try to live in the midst of our security, was our sinking ship. But when we leave that behind and we leave that life behind and we step out in the water, not when it's peaceful, not when it's calm, but in the midst of the chaos, and we keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, we can make it through the storm. Not by my authority and my power, but the authority and power of Jesus who can bring us through it. So don't wait. Don't wait. Don't wait until the storm passes to come to Jesus. Don't wait for the storm to pass to leave your seeming security to come to Jesus. But in the middle of the storm, step out. Step out of the sinking ship and come to Jesus. So this year, as we unpack this lesson series and we begin to talk about refocusing more on Jesus in this new year, I want us to continue remembering this resolution this year to resolve to spend more time focusing on Jesus and less time on the chaos around us, to allow him to be our peace, to allow him to be our solid ground that we walk on, to allow Jesus to perfect our faith. And this morning, a new year, fresh start. Don't wait until the chaos is over. But right now, if you find in your life that it is time for you to step out of your false sense of security and follow Jesus, whether that be whether you have been a Christian for years and you have fallen short of that expectation and you've lost focus and you're ready to come back to Jesus, this is an opportunity for us to pray with you and be with you as you begin that journey again. Or if you've never followed Jesus and this is your first time to come to Jesus and you want to be baptized for the remission of your sins, this is the opportunity for you to come forward as we stand and as we sing.
Hear, O Israel.